The following presentation is brought to you by Rant Entertainment Media. For the entertainment you love and the opinions and history you crave, visit rantenradio.com. The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment. Every week, The Shining Wizards is brought to you free of charge, and we thank you for listening. But if you'd like to help support the show in other ways, here's a few things that you can do to help. Go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a review. If you shop at Amazon, visit amazon.shiningwizards.com and shop the way you usually do. It won't cost you anything extra, and a small percentage of your purchase will help support the show. If you'd like to buy some of our merchandise, visit prowrestlingtees.com/shiningwizards or shiningwizards.com/merch and purchase one of our t-shirts or some of our other great stuff. Follow us on Twitter at Wizards Podcast. Become our friend on Facebook at Shining Wizards. Check out our Instagram photos at Wizards Podcast. And for all our videos, visit youtube.com/theshiningwizards. The Shining Wizards is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn, The Shining Wizards Network, ShiningWizards.com, and Tuesdays live at 7 p.m. East on SWLive.net and RantEMRadio.com. From all of us at The Shining Wizards, we thank you for your continued support.
Yo, what's up? It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, and you're listening to The Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast.
I have a small dick.
He's fat! God damn! Woo!
Buenos dias, hello, 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 and good morning, very early morning. Hi, Cincos all around to everyone listening around the world. It is our third installment of an international Shining Wizards, where, of course, no matter where you are, no matter what time zone, no matter what country, where they're oppressing women, gays, or anyone who's undecided about a penis or a vagina, and I stuttered and I can't believe it. It's wrestling talk, and talk about wrestling. I'm Tony, I'm sitting on the terrace, it's a beautiful sunny day at 10 a.m. where I am. And of course, on the other end of the tin can and string, to quote an old wrestling show, why don't you let the people know who you are, sir?
Ooh, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cunts of all ages, coming to you live from down on Bromley, your favorite wrestling monkey. Smith.
Holy shit, I forgot that you are the wrestling monkey. It's been so damn long since I've used the Twitter. My friend, my mate, my compatriot on this once-a-year sojourn, how are you this morning?
Very well, my friend. Life couldn't be better.
That's awesome. I heard you are having a life-changing event in the next couple of weeks, and I don't mean that you're changing to the other side of the sexes. I mean that you're moving up and on from the tableland.
Yes. Where one story ends, another one begins, my friend, and this is the greatest story I've ever read, and I want to read it until the end.
Sounds like fun, my friend. Sounds like fun. You know what? Since this is a once-a-year thing, before we actually get into the wrestling talk, I just wanted to know, is there anything that you'd like to speak about? Anything political? Anything that you want to know about, I don't know, about anything, or anything that you want to talk about or want to mention, or shout-outs, or anything like that? Like I say every year, the floor is yours.
No, I'm in a really good place at the moment. You know, I'm not looking for the battle in anything, which is a shame for a lot of people, I know. But still an opinionated motherfucker. I just do it with a smile these days.
Of course.
And I just want to, you know, what I want to do, you know, because this is my floor, and what I do want to get off my chest, because I'm saying it to everyone. It's no secret among people that know me that I lost a daughter to cot deaths 17 and a half years ago. And a little piece of me died that day when she left us. But I've met a woman by the name of Victoria McKenzie who has brought that out of me and made me feel alive again and the most alive I've felt in 17 and a half years, and I want to spend the rest of my fucking life thanking her for it. And that's all I've got to say.
That's awesome, my friend. I don't know if too many people actually knew, the story about your little one. I don't know if you shared that with too many people.
Do know me, no, but, just wanted to get it out of there.
That was touching, man. I don't know if I can get into that kind of heartfelt emotion in the morning.
Yeah, a bit early for all that fucking malarkey, isn't it?
But, brother, I'll just tell you this. Well, I know a lot of people know, and a lot of people know who you are through our little podcasting and radio community. And, though we've never met face to face, I always feel like that, that you and I have had a special connection. I know that you've had a great connection with all the people we know. And, we're always thrilled to have you and thrilled to talk to you. And, I'll come out and say it, brother. You've become a good friend to a lot of us. And for that, thank you. You are a great person. And I'm glad that we actually get to do this once a year.
Yeah. It's brilliant. I love it. And it's not like, everyone gets to look up and, because everyone's got their own lives to live. But like, it's nice that now and again, we can all just hit each other up and say, bruv, how you doing? You know what I mean? And just shoot the shit, even if it's for 5 minutes.
Yeah, and breaking balls and all that good stuff, man. It's a good time.
Is Gerbil Ed still watching?
Is who?
Hamster Ed, Garifo.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's here somewhere. Fucking Hamster Head. Oh, shit. He got so pissed, dude. I posted an awful picture of him that looked like Hamster Head, and he's like, please take that down. So I'm like, all right, dude, I'll take it down. I don't want to make him feel more like a dick.
He's got a fucking feral mammal, you know what I mean?
Love you, miss you, Kev. By the way, just a cheap plug to get out of the... Go ahead, I'm sorry. We're talking all over each other, but this is awesome.
Don't we always do this?
No, of course. Well, I must
the shit and everyone else listening.
Fuck them. This is for us. This isn't for anybody else. But they're all just getting to listen in and hear the fucking shenanigans that we get up to. I'm sitting out here. I'm sitting out here in the terrace. It's actually the first nice day we've had since I've been here. And thank you to all of our Chinamen who are listening out there for fucking sending these killer bees that are out here. And I don't mean Bee Brian Blair and Jumpin' Jim Brunzel. Apparently, there's been an infestation in Spain that they came over from China. And fuckers are all over the yard, so the kid and I can't even go out there and enjoy the yard and shoot around with the Nerf guns. But I'm digressing. Whatever. So I'm sitting here with my headphones on. I'm not in my usual microphone and big cans over my ears. There's people actually walking their dogs and on walkers right now wearing it looks like a sombrero. I don't even know. But who knows if they're even understanding me. You know what? Fuck this, Baza. Let's do a show. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it, brother.
Good morning to everybody that's out there that's posting. I hope we're coming in loud and clear. Phil Rea is awake. Manny Crotchrot's awake. Kevin is there. Louis Ramos is there. I don't know why you guys are up so fucking early. If it wasn't for this show, I'd be sleeping another 3 hours. But let's get into it.
They want to hear my dulcet tone. That's what it is.
Well, I guess that's why I'm awake too. But something that we talked about yesterday when we were going, not even going over so much for the show, but something that you really wanted to bring up, we might as well jump into it. The Joey Janela Leo Rush spot. Now, I've said it over the past couple of years. Joey Janela is awesome. I think there's just some crazy things that he does that he doesn't really need to do. And in this one, I can't even say it's his fault. You want to just give the people the story as to what we're talking about and then give us your opinion.
Well, as I understand it, it was a CZW show. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Because I've only seen the video a couple of times. And I sat there and tell you a lie, I watched it once. I was that fucking disgusted. I couldn't even bring myself to watch it again. And you've got Joey Janela with Leo Rush in a pole driver position, halfway up a fucking ladder. So he's like a good 6 foot in the air, delivers a pole driver, which to me has always been a legit finishing move. If you drop someone on their head, game over. So he jumps off the ladder, through a table, a fucking Leo Rush pops up like he's just been asked to go down the road and grab a pint of milk. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? What do you actually think you're doing? And I mean, and what makes it even worse for me is that he's only a little dude. He's like he looks like an 11-year-old that's found steroids for the first time. You know what I mean? And he's being thrown head first through a fucking table from a good 6 foot in the air, and he just pops up. And I'm like, fuck that shit, man. And I'm seeing too much of it. I'm seeing too much of it. It's almost like there's a fucking pissing contest going on now, where it's like, who can nose sell the biggest fucking spot? Does that make sense?
No, of course it doesn't make sense, but I just...
We've had the ruthless aggression era, we had the PG era, and we seem to be fucking going into the no sell era.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, but you know, I get the feeling we've been there a while. I don't know if it's going away anytime soon. And look, I don't mind the pile driver off the table, off the ladder into a table. I really don't. I would almost expect Leo Rush to kick out, which is probably no fault of his own. It's just the way the business, what it's come to these days. Yeah. But
pop straight up. It's like, no, mate. Sorry, mate. You're not the Undertaker.
Like you can almost understand. Like it looks like, from what I've seen, it looked like Janela was like actually selling the move, like, you know, rolling over, holding his head, like he was actually seemed like he was still hurt. But yeah, like Leo does the Superman and just stands up. And that, look, I've called some of Leo's matches. I think the world of the kid. He's got a lot of talent. I hear he signed a developmental deal, or at least he's got a deal going with NXT right now. So more power to him. But you see shit like this, I don't understand how you keep a job doing something like that when you've signed a contract with WWE, you know?
No, I don't. Because, it's... Like I say, I could only watch it once. So I just like, fuck that shit. That ain't what I watch wrestling for. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, like you say, you expect people to kick out nowadays, false finishes, blah, 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 blah. But to just completely no-sell it while the geezer who's fucking delivered it, he's selling the move, and you're the one on the end of the punishment, and you're just standing up there like hanging on there and going, you're right down there, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous. And if I was Joey Janela, I would have actually taken that personally. Because for me, that is, it's not bouldering, it's unprofessional.
Yeah, it really is.
Because you're working with someone, yeah? It's a dance. We all know it's a dance. And you have to do it as a partner. And it's like, you're meant to be doing the waltz, but your other one, but your partner's doing the fucking foxtrot, you know what I mean? And making you look like, a complete fucking mug. And that's what he's done. Leo Rush has made Joey Janela look like a fucking mug.
Yeah,
because Janela's doing everything he can to sell the move, and he's just standing there.
Yeah, and it's like I've said before, Janela's come, he's come so far and he's evolved so much. Like I said, I'm not crazy about him, getting thrown off of rooftops and whatnot, but the dude's talented as well. I've never sell Joey Janela short. It's just that, like you said, he made sure to take care of Leo Rush. You know, if it wasn't for Janela, Leo wouldn't be able to pop up from a move like that. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Unlike Shinsuke Nakamura dropping... Sorry, I don't know if you're aware of that one, but apparently WWE in their quest for ratings gave us Nakamura Cena for free last week, and during I guess it's Nakamura's finish where he was taking Cena over. He wound up dropping Cena practically instead of on his shoulders on the back of his head, and Cena was grabbing at his neck and Nakamura profusely apologized, and Cena was pretty much brushing it off, telling him don't worry about it, no big deal. Because Cena's a professional, and apparently Vince McMahon lost his shit because, well, let's face it, Cena is still his moneymaker.
But he's still going in, isn't
it? Yeah, it's kind of messed up. I got some of the locals waving to me.
All the time Cena's laying those golden eggs, he's always going to be number one.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know what? I saw it actually, and it didn't look too terrible. But for Cena to get up grabbing his neck, I don't know if it's so much, really selling the fact that Nakamura put him away or Cena was really hurt. I haven't really heard much about it. You know, like we mentioned earlier, I haven't really been watching much of the WWE product lately, but you know, you're Nakamura. You're in a good spot. Go ahead.
I watched NXT. I was, you know, until obviously recent life-changing events, I was keeping up to date with NXT. But there's nothing about Raw or SmackDown I want to watch. You know, there's nothing. Because, you know, I'm an older wrestling fan. I'm 41 years old, for fuck's sake. And, like, you know, I don't want to watch a watered-down version of a sport that I love. You know? And I hate the fact that we get no pole drivers. I hate the fact that, you know, you can't put a colour into a match, provided it's in context. You know, I'm basically watching a cartoon, and that's all it is. It's a cartoon, which is why, you know, I stick to me New Japan and me indie wrestling, because that gives me everything I need.
That's the other thing too. It seems at this point so many people are you know, flocking over to New Japan. So many people are looking to other avenues to get the kind of wrestling they want. Yeah. But go ahead.
Because there's so much out there, Tony, isn't it? I mean, with all the on-demand services that are available as well, you know, fans have never had it better. I mean, don't get me wrong, there'll be people that'll always love WWE. And, you know, and one thing WWE will have over anyone else and will continue to have going forward is production value. And that's what makes them so appealing, because that production value is, it can't be bettered by any other company out there.
Do you think the production value is a double-edged sword, though? I was thinking about this the other night. There's so many wrestling shows out there, and I think wrestling doesn't need to be so polished. Like, not only the production, but like you said, the lack of blood, the cartoon-like, you know, like feel, almost atmosphere to what's presented, and it cuts across all of their brands. It's Raw, it's SmackDown, it's NXT, it's 205. Everything just feels so cut, dry, polished, and dare I say, cookie cutter. I know we've used that a million times talking about this.
But, I mean, but a lot of that is because, as we know, WWE is now run by TV people, and Vince for a long time has wanted the WWE brand to be considered more a TV show than a wrestling company. Hence, the word wrestling is very raw. And I think they do it a little bit more now, don't they? Actually, reference the word professional wrestling. But for a long time, it was like a fucking taboo subject, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've felt like that for a long time. It's like, you know, Vince isn't happy with being viewed as a wrestling brand. He wants to be, you know, because they always quote it, longest running episodic TV show. That's what they want to be. They want to be a TV show. If you want to watch wrestling, go and watch New Japan. Go and watch your independents. I mean, over your side, go to WrestlePro, go to CZW, go to House of Glory. You know, over here, it's like, go to Progress, go to ICW. I went and watched, I can't speak highly enough of this, but last weekend, I went and visited a new promotion, which is about 10 minutes from where I live now, based in Lewisham, called Battle Pro Wrestling. It was their third ever show. And so being a company's third show, you would expect it to be a little rough around the edges, yeah? You know, because they're still trying to figure things out and actually give fans a feel of their direction. And because it's a new story, isn't it? A new company is a new story, and they have to build characters and rosters and give you an idea of where they're going with it. Blah, 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 blah. So, like, the fans get to go on a voyage of discovery with the promotion. Best show I've been watching for ages, as a standalone show. I think a little bit of it was because it was new, a new venue, but the quality of the wrestling and just everything around it, just like the venue felt right, the vibe was right, the ring announcer, you fucking love him, man. His name's Jason Santiago, right? And he comes out, he says hello to the fans while they're queuing up and that, and they'll welcome everyone into the building, which is something you don't get with a lot of promotions, is it? And the dude, he's got a mullet and a tash, and I looked at him and I said, you could be Magnum TA, and he fucking loved it, because I've got a feeling that he's modelled himself on him. But they just call him Mullet Man, but as soon as I saw him, I was like, you're Magnum TA! and he loved it, and he said, oh, I love Magnum TA, da, da, da. And I said, oh, yeah, he was on the first ever pay-per-view I watched. Great American Bash 85, Charlotte, the Coliseum, Greensboro Coliseum, Charlotte. Is it Greensboro Coliseum?
I think it's Greensboro. I forget. It's Green something.
Yeah, Greensboro Coliseum, Charlotte, North Carolina. That's the one where Ric Flair arrived in a helicopter to defend his NWA title against Nikita Koloff.
Well, why not?
And then he turned around and said, yeah, I was 3 years old. And I thought, you fucking old cunt. And he just aged me in a heartbeat. I was like, yeah, there goes another wrinkle across the eye. No, cracking promotion, top to bottom, like a mixture of established and newer up and coming talent, and it just had a really good feel for it, top to bottom. There's two people involved in it. One's I think his name's Simon Every, and the other bloke involved is a well known over on Marshalls, a wrestler by the name of Darryl Allen. And it was part of the Bangra Knights with RJ Singh. And I'd heard good things about their first two shows. And I've had the opportunity to go to this third show. And it just hit the nail on the head. And I went to two other shows that weekend. And even Rev Pro at the cockpit with War Machine on and da-da-da-da-da, that was my show of the weekend. And, you know, for any British fans who listen to this, if you get the opportunity to go to Livesey Hall in Lewisham, look up Battle Pro Wrestling. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. You know, they are doing really good. And, yeah, people should have a look. But anyway, that's enough advertising then for now.
No, that's fine, dude. I think a lot of people appreciate the fact that we do get to talk once a year because you get to at least catch me up anyway on some of the ongoings, you know, with UK British wrestling and whatnot. Let me ask you a question. So you went to this show. You said that you were interested in some of the homegrown talent. Do you find that a lot of the indies where you're at wind up using the same guys almost in like the same kind of feuds and the same stories where it's almost like, hey, you know, wrestler A, wrestler B, and they're wrestling for blah, blah, blah this week. And then next week they're doing the same thing for Yoo-Hoo over here. You know, does it seem like everything's starting to overlap to you? Because I get that feeling a lot in the States now. Like a lot of the guys are working the same territories, working the same stories, but it's like the same kind of thing, just in a different location every other week.
Yeah, that's very true. Because, you know, the number of promotions that have popped up here over the last year is, you know, you get more, obviously more and more shows being run on Thursdays and Fridays, whereas, like, it was traditionally Saturday, Sundays, wasn't it?
Yes.
You know, apart from, like, over here when you're, if you're on the camp circuits, if you're working for, like, NGW or All-Star Wrestling, then, like, you're generally, you know, going on the loop. But you get more and more promotions running Thursday, Friday, as well as the Saturday, Sunday. And, yeah, you are getting a lot of overlap. So, particular instance, you're getting a lot of companies booking British Strong Style, which is your Trent Seven, Tyler Bate, and Pete Dunne against CCK, which is Kid Lykos, Chris Brooks, and Travis Banks. I don't know if you're familiar with Travis Banks. He is this year's winner of Progressive Super Strong Style 16 tournament. Very good talent. I saw him wrestle for the first time last year in, I think it was in Birmingham for ICW when I was on my weekend tour. And I was impressed straight away. He's from New Zealand. And, yeah, I was very impressed.
Good to hear.
But yeah, you are in that overlap where it's either 3-on-3, 2-on-2, 1-on-1. It's like every company at the moment seems to be taking the, say, top 8 to 10 talents about, and they all seem to be wanting to book them. You know what I mean? And this is why I like what ICW do, because they've got their own thing, they've got their own brand, they've got their own roster, They change up their storylines very well, and they insert a popular name here and there just to freshen things up a little bit. But you're getting a lot of promotions. It's like everyone over here wants to book Matt Riddle.
Well, I mean, Matt Riddle is the shit right now, to be honest with you.
And I'll tell you what a fucking thoroughly decent dude as well.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, because I mean, I had the opportunity, I can't remember when it was now, it was before Christmas, I think. But, or early this year. But anyway, it was at an IPW Super Show in Rochester, in Kent here, where I live. And after the match, I went up to him, like, said thank you, just having a little chat with him about his like, UFC career and whatnot. And his merch table was like right next to the gents. Bolden said, oh, he said, I don't like talking to you. He said, let's go and get a drink. So, I don't need no convincing, go for a beer. and so I went out, I bought a couple of beers and that. And we just sat there chatting, just talking like two fans for like half hour.
Yeah, he's so chill. About, he really is.
So chilled out. And then that was, like I say, that was a good few months ago. And like I say, it might even have been just before Christmas. And then he was at the British J Cup recently, the inaugural British J Cup run by Revolution Pro Wrestling at the Assembly Halls in Walthamstow, and which was a very good tournament, won by Jushin Thunder Liger, the fucking inaugural winner, and that got a fucking huge pop.
85-year-old Jushin Thunder Liger, he's fucking old as dirt.
He's got to be about 52 now.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, and even me at 41 years old. I was jumping up and down. That's how it got you, you know?
Yeah, well, you know? I mean, listen, that's why we became fans, because once it starts hitting and takes you on that emotional ride, like, there's nothing better than that, you know?
Definitely. And when we get to our age, we're, you know, like Phil Ray, I know, as well, because, I mean, he likes to wax lyrical about it now and again. He's like, you know, when you get to our age, we still love the wrestling industry, but we're a bit wiser and a bit more sceptical, and it's like it takes something a bit good to really get you going, you know. It takes that little bit extra to get you to really get you to lose your shit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I talked about it a few weeks ago. There's really nothing compelling right now. That's really keeping me interested. Not to say that there's not talent out there. Not to say that these guys, when they get in the ring, are doing a great job. It's just nothing's really grabbing my attention.
In a wrestling sense?
I mean, you take a look at, like, look. I was all in with Braun Strowman. I'm a big fan of the character. I'm a fan of the guy. I really enjoy it. I'm tired of watching him with Roman Reigns. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just sick of
it. Back in the day, I think a lot of it as well is because you're fed so many short, sharp storylines that, obviously I know it's going on, but like I say, I don't follow the product so much these days. But there used to be a way to do the long game and keep people interested. And all they seem to be doing is just keep throwing them at each other to see if it sticks. You know, I'll get the impression from a lot of fans because no one's talking about it. You know, no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
Apart from the odd fan who's like bored of it, because what are they actually doing with it? What are they doing to keep fans interested in the storyline? Apart from throwing them at each other, does it stick? Because they just seem to be going down the fucking Hogan route with Roman, don't they? And just, you know, let's throw like all the big scary dudes at him, and you know. Yeah, it worked in 1983. Let's see if it works in 2017. No, it won't, because fans have changed. And what fans want have changed. Because wrestling has changed because of the internet. You know, back when we were kids in the 80s watching wrestling, the reason we could buy into it is because there was no internet. You saw very little of them on the TV. You saw little bits and bobs in the media. So, like, when you did go to a show and you actually got to see these people, or if you did get to watch a pay-per-view or whatever, you knew about them. There was a mystery. You know, there was a mystery that you could buy into because you weren't having it rammed down your fucking throat 24-7.
And I think, yeah, and I think the other thing that helps is, like you said, with no internet, your television options were very scarce at that point.
So, and a lot of that was down to, as well, if your family could afford to have certain cable channels that would allow you to watch certain wrestling promotions, you know?
Yeah, and I'll be honest. When I was a kid, I was pretty spoiled. A lot of kids in that grew up in the New York area. I mean, we had all the syndicated shows. We had GLOW, which was awesome. If you haven't checked out the show on Netflix, I highly recommend that, as well as the documentary, which was very well done. But I'm digressing. And if you had cable television in the 80s, they would actually broadcast the live shows from not only the Meadowlands and the Spectrum, but we also got the Live Garden Show every month.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, you know, you got your prelim matches, of course, but you also got some pretty solid main events for the most part. You know, Hogan was main eventing the Garden so many times. The Spectrum, you'd get like some of the shows, you'd get like the tag title matches. You'd get the Macho Man headlining as the IC champ. We'd even get the shows out of Boston, you know? It was amazing stuff. It was great stuff that we got to see on TV just from the fact that we had cable. Think about that. Cable was the big thing, you know? You didn't have a streaming service. You couldn't buy HBO on the side if you wanted to. There was no Netflix. If you wanted a videotape, you had to go to the store and rent it or actually buy it for $100.
And I still go back to them days, and like I say, about like the mystery that used to surround the business and the wrestlers and whatnot. And because it wasn't being rammed down people's throat, people got genuinely excited when they were in the same building as these people, and you saw that energy from the crowds, you know?
And you felt a true connection with the product because it just, you know?
You could see it. The emotion was palpable.
Yes.
Whereas now, You watch WWE. I mean, you could sit at home and watch them shows and get excited watching them indoors because of the energy that was coming out of it, yeah?
Yeah.
Whereas now, you're watching a WWE product, you're looking around, and it's just like, just happy to be here. And it's like, I know you've got someone sitting there with their arms crossed, like, well, go on in and impress me. You know what I mean? I've already been on 101 fucking... wrestling WWE wrestling pages, putting my thoughts out as to exactly how the card's going to go, and if the card doesn't go exactly how I fucking planned it, I'm going to be very annoyed and tell you all that your product is shit because you didn't agree with me.
And you know what, man? That's
what a bunch of wankers.
That's what I really loved about the about Goldberg's return and his three matches with Brock Lesnar, because it wasn't just two idiots beating the shit out of each other for 20 minutes. It was an actual story. It had an awesome arc to it. And Brock, even though he was a heel, he actually, like, it took him three matches to figure out how to beat Goldberg. And it was amazing. I don't care if the fucking matches were even 40 minutes shorter. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was awesome the way it spanned three pay-per-views. The story they told. Like, you know, just the badassness and, like, you know, we're going to figure you out. And then they finally did. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah. And you know what the bottom line was? For me, it actually looked like a fucking fight.
Yeah.
It looked like a power struggle, you know? It actually looked like a power struggle. No, none of this, like, convoluted, like, staggered bollocks that you get in some matches sometimes. It actually looked like a fight. The whole storyline looked like a fight for supremacy from start to finish.
Dude, and even the finish of the first match, it's like, no fucking way, no fucking way, no fucking... And, like, you just couldn't believe it was happening. And then it happened, you were like, no shit.
It's just... I mean, because I was... That felt like it was Survivor Series, wasn't it? Was it Survivor Series last year?
It's coming to you.
It was, wasn't it? Go on, tell me I'm right.
Did I lose you there? I don't know. I you might have cut out. I think I lost your thought.
No. I was saying that first match between Lesnar and Goldberg was a Survivor Series, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, I believe so. Then the rematch was the Rumble, and then the final match was WrestleMania, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or am I thinking of that wrong?
Yeah. Because, that's right. It's just, I was a bit fuzzy in Glasgow at the time.
Wait, was it Mania? No, it was just, Yeah, it was Mania because
we'll be returning again this year.
Yeah, because the main event of Mania was Reigns. No, was it Reigns and Undertaker?
Yeah, it was.
Fuck yeah, because that's right. He left
Undertaker left his bits in the ring. I cried. I'm not gonna lie. My 40-year-old ass cried.
Are you serious? You know what? I honestly like.
I did. Yeah, because I'm an old romantic like that.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, and I'm fortunate enough. You know, we're of an age where we've been able to follow his whole career.
True
from
enough.
From that initial, again, Survivor Series moment, when he was introduced as the Million Dollar Man's one of his mystery team members.
Yes.
Roddy Piper, look at the hand marks on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, so, I didn't get the tears, but I definitely got the feels from it, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't say that to say that I'm a better man than you. I'm just, you know, I'm stating a fact. Like, you know, it was a bit emotional. Although, how great would it have been if he just stripped down to his fucking drawers and left the ring? Like, just left everything. Like, started taking his boots off, took down his trunks, then his tights.
Yeah. Left his bottle of hair dye.
Yeah, fucking naked Undertaker.
There's don't need the old hair dye anymore. Fucking.
Oh, shit. So Kevin's jumping in. He's like, the other squash you're thinking of is Goldberg killing Owens. Yeah, fair enough. That was when he won the title. Because he didn't win the title from Goldberg. From Lesnar.
No, that's fair.
Fuck,
at least they done it with Owens that he put up a bit of a fight. Because he's the champion, isn't he?
Yeah, and then, I mean, even he was like, you know, trying to figure shit out too, and then when he finally stepped in the ring, yep, so too bad, it was over. Although, it was one of those things that just fucking absolutely pisses me off is when they have the cocksucker standing on the fucking ramp and his music plays and then all of a sudden you get distracted enough to get rolled up. It's like, dude, it happens every fucking week. You don't know this is coming. It's like, why would you pay attention to that shit?
Yeah, you know, dude.
I don't get it. I fucking don't get it. You know what? Before we move on, I do have a topic that I wanted to get us into, but I know, Jesus, people are fucking flooding the shit out of me over here. Good morning to our friend Sunny Kiss, actually up and listening to us. Thank you for that. This is fucking amazing. Phil Ray is on his day off. I guess, I don't think there's a Turnbuckle Throwbacks tonight. So Phil, fucking enjoy yourself. Take it out and fucking stroke it a little bit for us.
Phil has only phoned in. Phil Ray is only listening in for one reason. Cause he wants to see me in my English accent say cunt. Cause he loves it.
Yeah, you know, give him a soundbite that's better than that cunt one that he always plays. Fucking just give him a shout out. Phil, you fucking cunt.
Yeah, Phil, you fucking cunt. I fucking love you.
He's popping so hard for that right now. Unless he fell back asleep, you fucking bastard. It is fucking, it's almost 5 o'clock over there, so they should be waking up now anyway. Let's see. Go ahead. Of course, who doesn't want to hear Baza? That's why they're all awake, dude. They're awake for you. They ain't awake for me. They fucking hear my fat ass all the time.
Yeah, they're waiting to see how far I can drive this car until I fucking crash it. That's why.
That's all right, brother. We'll fucking put it right into the wall and over into the fucking channel. That's all we need. Here, let's see. Our buddy Justin from Inconclusive Breakdown. Thoughts on the World of Sport comeback and the WWE UK Championship and upcoming show?
Well, the World of Sport comeback is dead.
Really? Enlighten me, because I was excited for that. What happened?
Everyone was excited for it until Jeff Jarrett got involved.
Oh, is it a fucking global force thing now?
There's nothing happening. There is no news. We had that one show. Jeff Jarrett come in. TNA were going to be involved in it, you know, and we've heard nothing since. All the dates that were meant to have been... All the dates earlier, it would have been early June. Late May, early June, around that time. There was meant to be a weekend of TV tapings. All got scrapped. And nothing else has been heard since.
Well, don't forget, it took Global Force 3 years to find its home, and now it's called Impact.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if maybe Jarrett's bought the rights to it. Because there's a pissing contest going on at the minute to get the British market because of how hot it is at the minute.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. You know, it's like WWE. They've come over. UK champion, we're going to have weekly shows. Well, weekly shows once a fucking year, you know. That's annual, not weekly.
Yeah, so what do you think about that? I mean, a lot of people, I'll pull it back just a little bit. A lot of people are souring right now on 205 Live. They've stopped changing the ropes from purple to leaving them the red colors for Raw. It seems like that might be on its last legs as it is. Do you see the same for the UK championship?
Wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me at all. I'm not sure that because, you know, not to, you know, shit talk your country, but America is very protectionist in a business sense, you know, and in that regard, WWE, Vince McMahon, Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Shane, their first thought is always going to be protecting the American market. And they know that their American market isn't the beacon that they would like to have everyone believe. We all know that. You know, it's everything's great, everything's fine. We all know it's not where they would want it to be. And because of that, everything else goes on the back burner. But, you know, you go out there, you put a bit of interest out there, you tap into markets with this, that, and the other, you know, because it's all about selling the fucking network, isn't it?
Yeah,
this is the game now for WWE going forward, you know, is to sell the network. And that's why you get your interest. That's why you get your interest in the on-demand. That's where you get the interest with the UK Championship. You know, who's their other big market in Europe? Germany. They've just signed one of Germany's biggest stars, Axel Dieter Jr. Fantastic talent. You've already got, I forget what his fucking name is now. He's insanity, the German dude with the blonde hair.
Mm.
You know what I mean, don't you? Usually tags with Killian Dane.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Fuck, I can't think of his name. Shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though, don't you?
Just call him.
He was known as Axel Tischer over here. And, you know, so like they're tapping into the German market. You know, Jinder Mahal. That was just a. You know, having a pop at the Indian market. You know, I mean, they're looking to go truly global with the on-demand stuff because, you know, I mean, all right, they've still got stuff to work on in America now, but they need to go global.
Yeah, but they've been talking about going global for probably close to 20 years now. I remember during the Attitude Era, they were looking to expand into China at that point. They were actually looking to tap into Japan, the United Kingdom, like Mexico. Like they were looking to open offices everywhere. As a matter of fact, I think they wanted to put Shane McMahon in charge of what they were hoping to become WWE China.
But they didn't have the platform.
No, exactly.
They didn't have the platform or enough room to make it work. But as soon as they got this on-demand service, I mean, believe me, I mean, of course they know that how far they can go with it and the avenues they can explore with it. You know, and I think this year has been about testing those waters for bigger things to come down the line. Because they've always done their world tours, this, that, and the other. They are a global brand, but there's a difference between being a global brand and being a global business. And I think that's what they're looking to move on to next.
Fair enough.
Dipping their toes in the water with the UK Championship. Then they're pulling in, you see them pulling in talent from other European countries who are big sellers for the WWE. You know, you put the strap on Jinder Mahal, instantaneously, the Indian market, as a rule, goes mental for anything Indian that is on the international radar.
Oh, no doubt.
You're a fucking hero overnight. You know,
no doubt. And I don't know how you feel about Jinder Mahal. I like the whole thing. Then again, I was also a fan of the whole JBL title run, even though I don't think too much of JBL, you know, as a human being. But I like Jinder.
I don't mind the Maharaja thing at all, you know, and I think people are getting too caught up with his when he was in a three-man band because they look at Jinder Mahal and they're just remembering that, you know what I mean?
Well,
and it's like, You know, no one looks at the Hardys and remember them fucking standing at the door at King of the Ring, do they?
No.
You know what I mean? The odd person will bring it up, but they don't remember them being jobbers and fucking stooges.
And nobody... You know, nobody
but with Jinder Mahal, they want to remember it. You know, and I don't know why, because I think it's a fucking great character.
Nobody brings up Terror Rising.
And, yeah.
Nobody brings up the prototype, you know.
What I do like about Jinder Mahal, from what I've seen of him, he's got the facial expressions.
Oh, yeah.
For the part. You know, he looks like a horrible, rich, spiteful little prick.
And he's not he's not a handsome guy either. He's got a fucking ugly mug to him.
You know, and that's half the battle sometimes with any character, isn't it? Having the right... Your face fitting your character.
Of course. I think that's why the main events... I think that's why the main events in Japan right now are so good, because, you know, Kenny Omega, he's gotten the facial expressions finally, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And what people understand is, like... It's not only selling a move, it's like selling the emotion. It's getting people involved, and there's no better way to do that than with facials. Not those kind of facials, Louis. Take it easy.
The cream. Louis wants a cream pie. Hey, no, not on this show, brother. Wrong channel. Give yourself a Pornhub. Because unfortunately, I've missed them. I was bang up to date with the G1 climax. And then, obviously, life went bang. I haven't watched a thing since. I've kept half an eye on it, though, like on the results and that. And, but no, you're right, Kenny Omega. He is getting the facial expressions. And what I was going to say as well is, like, drawing in fans, for the last couple of years now, you know, the Japanese fans are getting so much more vocal and, dare I say it, like westernized in how they approach attending a wrestling show. You're seeing a lot more merch on display at Japanese shows now. You know, they're starting to get here a bit.
Well, I think they're.
Go on, mate.
I think they're a lot more polished too. Like, you take a look at the presentation of New Japan right now. You know, the big screens, the over the top music and entrances and whatnot. I don't know if they're trying to be WWE, but their product is a lot more polished than it's ever been. You know, they're more concerned about presentation as well.
I don't know. I mean, their actual TV presentation is a lot better. I mean, you know, if you're talking about that in regards to production value, when I look at the stages and what they're using for like entrance ways and that, for me, that's changed very little over the last few years. A little tweaks here and there, da 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 da. They're definitely putting more effort into entrance music, and you know, and that's good to see, because you know it just felt for a little while sometimes that like it was like, you know, insert generic insert Far East music here. Here comes Ressa, yeah. Beat each other up
from Japan. Come on, dude. It's like everybody with the Asian appearance was from Japan or from Korea or from China.
Yeah, there's no like sort of provinces or cities mentioned. And but you're getting real characters.
Yes.
You know, you're getting real characters. I mean, I believe Bullet Club is probably still the biggest merch seller out there as a faction. But as an individual, I'm pretty sure it might be Tetsuya Naito. And, you know, I just loved following the story of him slowly destroying the Intercontinental title. You know?
Yeah, what's the point of that? Were they trying to commission a new belt? Because I think they had the same one just kind of like rebuilt or redone.
Because I mean, obviously, like, Hiroshi Tanahashi being for the title at, I want to say Dominion, I'm probably wrong. But no, the story was, it's just like, Tetsuya Naito is like the leader of a faction called Los Ingobernables, which basically translates as the Ungovernables. And you know, it was just about him showing complete disrespect for the New Japan hierarchy and what they stand for, you know.
And what was amazing was that every time he was going to destroy the belt, the crowd was on that ride with him, like, no, don't do it, don't do it. And then when he didn't do it, they were like, whew, and then he'd just smash it anyway.
You know, he just walked to the ring and just for no reason, just throw it like 20 foot in the air and wherever it lands, you know. Because, you know, the title belts, the IWGP belts, are, you know, I know you're not a big watcher of New Japan Wrestling, but you understand, like, you know, there's a lot of honour involved in Japanese wrestling.
No, of course.
Wrestling, you know? Well, and, I mean, and with even... that, the belts are like worn like crowns. So for Naito to actually just systematically, like, destroy one of their, like, top belts is a, you know, it's a massive show of dishonor.
Well, you had it twice back in the day. I forget who it was, but somebody destroyed Bob Backlund's belt, and he cried over it, made him look like a puss. But the other one was Tito Santana when he finally defeated Greg Valentine and won the title back, and Valentine just, like, took the belt in the cage and just smashed the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Which, dude, like, as a kid, like, I went nuts for that. I was like, he's destroying the belt. And I remember it was like a random, like, wrestling challenge or superstars where they presented Tito with the new belt, which, if you're into wrestling and you're into that new Intercontinental belt, that's where the design originally came from. So you all can thank Greg Valentine for that one.
Yeah, definitely.
The cunt. Definitely. Let me see. I've got a couple questions here. I think mostly it's from Louie, and then we'll get into my topic that I wanted to go over with you.
I've got about another 10 minutes before I have to get ready for work. So.
Okay, fuck. So let me get through this. Are you a fan of death matches? Let's go into it. Louie wants to know, Onita fan? Onita Tremont? Are you a death match fan? And he wants to know if there's Four Loko in England.
If there's what in England?
Four Loko. It's like an energy / alcoholic drink that Louis fucking, like, lives on. I think it's half of his bloodstream. Probably not.
Never seen Four Loko. I like a death match if it's done in the right context. I don't like watching two blokes throw each other through a pane of glass for fucking $20 or $30 or whatever you want to call it. You know, just for the sheer hell of it, doesn't entertain me whatsoever. If there's a storyline behind it, then fucking hell yeah. You know, like there was with Jimmy Havoc and Paul Robinson when they had their tete-a-tete progress. It was all done storyline driven and it was brilliant.
Okay, it's just a bunch of back and forth between Louis and Kevin wanting to blow each other, so I could skip all that. You could get what else is new, right? So there's other stuff we can get. I just want to get to my topic and your thoughts. There's been a lot of groups lately. Like, you know, we look at Bullet Club, we look at, you know, especially over through history. And I know that Matt and Kevin talked about some of the groups in history and what their favorites were a few weeks ago. But my question to you is, if you were setting up a supergroup, and I'm talking maybe 3-4 guys at the most, if you want to put a manager with them, that's fine. Throughout history, let's look at it over time. Who would your supergroup be? Who would you put in your supergroup?
How are we doing it? So we're doing like
you could set it up however you want. If you want to do like a four horsemen style where there's a leader, there's a tag team, there's a muscle. If you want to do it, you know, however you want to do it. Just, you know, if you want to base it on something that you've seen before, if you want to just go completely off the deep end and do one that you want to start from scratch. However you want to do it, take guys from any time period. Guys that you think would work well together, put them together, form your supergroup, name them if you want to. Just something I had off the top of my head I thought would be interesting to close the show.
I mean, this would come from my childhood.
Okay, fair enough.
It has to come from my childhood because, you know, it's too easy to speak about, like, contemporary wrestlers, you know. I probably could do, but there'd be a lot to think about. So, like, if I had to pick a four-man faction... going on what I liked as a kid, it'd be like, I would probably go along the lines of Ric Flair, Jake the Snake Roberts, Road Warriors. That'll be my personal super group.
Do you put a manager with them, or do you think the four stand alone?
If I had to pick anyone going in, it would have to be Paul Henry.
That's a good call. That's a very good call. I was thinking somebody along those lines as well for my manager. I actually went with Gary Hart.
Yeah.
Just because he's a bigger fucking monster too, and I think like if it came down to it, he'd be able to handle himself.
Yeah, what I've always loved about Paul Ellering is his intellect and eloquence. You know.
Yeah.
He's a man of words, you know, and he can use those words to actually strike fear into people, which, like, you know, he's not the biggest man physically, but he can get inside someone's head and resonate with them on an intellectual level, which sometimes can be more powerful than actually a physical look, you know.
And I mean,
it's all right being able to punch someone hard, but if you can get inside someone's head, you fucking won the game.
See, that's kind of why I went with Gary Hart. I think overall in the history of wrestling, he's very underrated for what he accomplished and what he did. And, you know, he's got the intellect as well. He's just a bigger stature kind of guy. Like, I think he matches up well, you know, standing next to other professional wrestlers. But no problems with Paul Ellering at all. My choice, just so you know, I went with Dusty Rhodes as a leader. Because I always felt like Dusty was always like, you know, it was always him versus everyone. I think it would be a different dynamic for him if it was him, like, backed up by some other guys. You're going to hate my fucking tag team, though. I went with Strikeforce. I went with Martel and Santana, because I think if you put suits on those guys, they could actually, like, and plus they give it a little international flavor, like Mexico and Canada, you know, like French-Canadian.
Yeah.
And my muscle... Hercules, why not? I think he got screwed because he was penciled in as the third member of the Mega Powers years ago, and like he never got that shake. And I always liked him. I thought Power and Glory was a great tag team that didn't really get a chance. So fuck it, why not?
Yeah, you're right, because they definitely looked the part.
Yes,
they looked the part all over. But I mean, I think Power and Glory. The impression I got of Power and Glory, right, is that I think people looked at them as a shit Powers of Pain.
Yeah, you think so? I don't see it.
I mean, not like in like you know, it's like a very fucking watered down version. It, just because like the name thing, the black and I mean, all right, they weren't painted up, they weren't as big as them guys, but it just had a feel like, you know, they were just sort of reaching a bit with like names and stuff like that, and maybe it's just me looking at it from the wrong angle.
No, fair enough. I thought that they.
I'll have faults in my hair, which doesn't fucking collate with whatever every other fucking human being does, so that won't be a new one.
Well, that wouldn't be any fun then, would it?
Yeah. Well, I have a fun head. You must climb into that at some time.
You know what? I think I just named the episode, I Have a Fun Head.
Yeah, it's a fucking... The inside of my skull is like a fucking theme park for despair, you know? And no, I try to stay outside of it these days.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Well, I know I know the future's holding a lot of new and exciting worlds for you. So once again, I thank you. This has been a fucking blast. I love doing this every year.
Yeah, man. I must take the time to actually just hook up with you on Skype outside of shows and just start shooting the shit sometimes.
No, that always sounds like a fucking plan, brother. That always sounds like a plan. I will do that anytime. Anytime you want. And we don't even have to we don't even have to record it, so we can be complete assholes on top of it. Well, before I let you go, is there anything that you want to say to the masses out there?
Two things. The first one is you're all cunts, but you're my kind of cunts, and I love you. And the second one, and this is a more of a personal message, I just want to wish all the best to Choppy and Brielle Magarka as they bring Logan into the world.
Good call, my friend. Good call. For Mr. Baza Smith over in jolly old England, and for Tony in España, thank you all for tuning in early this morning. If you're listening in podcast form, I hope you enjoyed it as well. Of course, if you have anything you want to send us, hit us up on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Gmail, anywhere else. Next Tuesday, Gino Gotz will be joining the rest of the crew in studio, so make sure you tune in for that.
Isn't Gino Gotz, isn't he like that really shit Leo Getz?
Yeah, something like that. He's a cocksucker anyway.
It reminds me of like a fucking cancel state Joe Pesci, you know?
Hey, don't get it mixed up, though. He is the star of Destruction 101. Love you, Dave. Miss you, brother. Anyway, I'm Tony.
I'm Bazza.
And we'll see you cunts on the other side.
Woo!
You fucking horrible cunt.